Hello and welcome everybody to Flickr Effect, episode 373. We are recording this on Sunday, August 1st, 2021. I'm David Lott. Joining me this week is Bobby Jackson.
Hey, how's it going?
Yasha Wilson.
Hey, 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 everybody.
And Michelle Hillard. Welcome back.
Hi, everyone. Hello.
Welcome back.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
So
this week, I'll say for my part, I'm here, but my contributions this week will be minimal. I've been out of town for about a week on a camping trip where I barely even had signal most of the time. So I really haven't watched much of anything. But we'll see. We'll see what I can contribute as we go along. I know you guys have seen plenty this week, so there's still plenty to talk about, plenty to discuss. But I'll just be kind of steering the ship, I think, mostly this week. Just give everyone a heads up.
My cup runneth over.
Yes.
Well, let's start with you, man. Jeez.
well, first, I figured we'd start with, I guess, kind of the big movie on the block this week. And I haven't looked at box office numbers, but I would just venture to guess that's Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, I don't see
that. Which
35 million, I think.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, $34.2 million international, 27.6 for a grand total worldwide of about $61 million so far.
So Disney's Jungle Cruise, based after one of their signature rides at their theme parks, featuring The Rock and
Yasha's favorite.
Yep. Miss Emily Blunt.
Miss Emily Blunt. Also, it looks like a Paul Giamatti as well.
Yeah, he was there. Okay. Let's just say that.
I'm just going off the trailers.
I didn't even know that.
Off the trailers I saw. Anyways. So yeah, so who got to see that? I really wanted to see it. I'm actually really eager to see this film. I think it looks
This is
going to
be good.
Oh, all I will say is I feel like it looks like it's a fun movie. Borderlining kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean, kind of fun, like just a fun action film, silly but fun. That's what I'm hoping for. But Yasha, now I'm concerned. But what are you going to tell us about it, Yasha?
You know what? It's right in the middle of the board for me. It wasn't good. It wasn't great. It was legitimately, in my opinion, just okay. Picture The Mummy with Brendan Fraser meets Pirates of the Caribbean. That is legitimately the template that they took for this movie. And it is almost exactly like that. The Mummy plus Pirates of the Caribbean, and you have this movie. Throw in The Rock, throw in Emily Blunt, throw in Quirky Brother. And I mean, literally, almost the template is just the exactly what I'm saying right there. I was thoroughly kind of disappointed when I saw what it was going to be and how it was going. And it was legitimately just okay. I didn't particularly care for it that much. I don't know if I would refer or recommend anybody to go see it in the theater, in my opinion. Like I said, it was really just okay. I could have waited to see this or just watched it at home, and I went to the actual theater to see it. But it was, I liked supporting The Rock. You know, I mean, he's always so good with his fans. He's always so good with his people that I don't mind throwing $12 at the movie to go see this when, you know, to kind of just support him. We all know how I feel about Emily Blunt. That's not a secret. she didn't disappoint. It was true. Emily Blunt fashion in this movie, just kind of like whatever. And, I mean, for the most part, I actually dozed off a little bit in the movie as well. Wasn't because I was super tired or anything like that. It just didn't capture my interest that much. And I did legitimately fall asleep for a while. I think maybe 10 minutes before I was woken up again. And that's it. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably get like a 4 or 5. Ooh. And it's blowing my way that it's ranking so remarkably high on Rotten Tomatoes.
Would you call it? I wouldn't call that remarkably high. It's 63%. I mean,
yeah, that's not very high.
Is that the audience score?
Last The last report that I saw was like 80 something.
Oh, okay.
So that's probably okay, why that's the down. Last thing yeah. that I heard of.
I mean, the audience the audience score is way up there. That's 93%.
Okay.
But
that's
the audience score is 93%, then the tomato meter is 63%. So it's like, I mean, it sounds like a lot of the critics probably feel the same way that we do, since we're kind of nitpicky when it comes to these films. But yeah, when I started watching it and the way that they were going, I was like, okay, so this is exactly almost verbatim the beginning of The Mummy. And, now we're into Pirates of the Caribbean. Okay, we've totally succumbed and given up to even trying to pretend we are 100% in Pirates of the Caribbean now. And scene. Good job. And that's it. Right. That's my feeling about it.
Bobby, you also saw it. What'd you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Yasha nailed the tone in terms of it being as far as like a mix mash of the Pirates of the Caribbean and The Mummy. I mean, that to me, that's really what these two movies are combined together. I think Michelle kind of pinpointed the overall thought of it is just that it's silly. It's supposed to be fun, and I suppose there's a level of fun to be had with it. I don't think I quite achieved that level with it. It was all right, like Yasha said. I would probably rate it a little bit higher, but it was fine. I mean, I wouldn't rush out to go see it again, although there was elements of it that I did like. There were some certain aspects of it to the plot that I didn't see coming that I thought was interesting, that they went in certain directions with it. And I think some of the weak points of it was the CGI. I mean, it looked really amateurish at times. For it to be a big production from Disney, you would expect a little bit better in terms of special effects. And sometimes it just looked like they just took the cheap way out with some of the way that they did some of the characters. But I think where this movie thrives and maybe has a home for is with families, because as I was sitting there watching, I was like, man, this would play very well in a four quadrant type movie scenario where you're going to have kids and families together and there's something in there for the kids or something in there for adults. It seems like it plays really well with families. I couldn't imagine taking like 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds to this with the family and them not having a good time watching it. There's just a lot of aspects, like you said, Yasha, as far as there being like The Mummy and Pirates of the Caribbean. I think that it does those things so much in the movie that it tries to entertain from beginning to end. There's some slow parts in it, but overall, I think it's trying to go for that action-adventure type scenario, and I think it does it, but I don't know that it does it extremely well or as well as those individual things did. And so I think on a just a surface level, it should play pretty well for a family, but if you're just kind of like a solo person going to go see it, I wouldn't necessarily say this is something you would rush out to go see or would even enjoy on your own. It might be something that if you see it on Disney Plus later on down the line, you might be like, all right, that was fine. But you're not going to really come away with it feeling like you can't wait for them to make 6 other movies out of this series or whatever. So it's there for the families, and I think that's where people will enjoy it. But aside from that, it's kind of like it's just okay.
All right. So, Michelle, that's you still want to see really Jungle Cruise?
So, I mean, like, I want to see Jungle Cruise, and I've been very set on seeing it in the theater, but now I'm kind of like, maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, as far as where I am, I want to see it too. I think I've already expressed, I know I've expressed to you, like, for me, it's like, I think going, not to go down the road of talking about the pandemic, but I'm to the point now, I'm already like, eh. I'm already back to a movie that has to be really like, I have to see this in the theater right now to see it in the theater.
Right.
Unfortunately, the way things are going here in Florida, like I'm probably not going to go back to a movie theater unless it's like Eternals.
Right. Know? Yeah. No, like I have to agree. It's kind
Shang-Chi.
Or that, yeah, too.
It's just, I think it's just,
Eternals is an example, but yeah, Shang-Chi. Like,
it's going to have to be pretty big, Shang-Chi. I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's getting off topic.
I think it's great for you guys then to just get the Premiere Plus, Disney Plus thing, because, what, it's $30 and your whole family could watch it. So yeah, it'd be kind of good. If you're watching it with respect. The kids,
that's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, before we move off the topic of it, I don't know if Yasha or Michelle, you saw that in what you were reading, but I think it said it made 30-something million on Disney Premier Plus or Disney Plus Premier, whatever they call it.
Oh, I didn't see how much it made on Disney Plus.
I haven't seen it.
I think my issue now with Disney Plus, and I feel like all I have to say is two words, and it's Scarlett Johansson. Like... I'm in her court, and it's infuriating about that situation. We definitely don't have to discuss it, but honestly, like, yeah, it's...
Well, since you're bringing it up, for those who don't know, you are talking about...
So, Scarlett Johansson, who plays the Black Widow in the Marvel films, and in the most recent Marvel film, Black Widow, so her contract... It initially states that it's only a theatrical release for the film Black Widow. It would only be a theatrical release. It would not go to streaming initially. It was very crystal clear. And during the pandemic, even just slightly before the pandemic, she went to Disney and was like, I'm just making sure we are all on the same page here, that this is what's happening. And they're like, okay, sure, sure, sure. And then basically what happened was that they came back to her and said, oh, yeah, so we are going to do the streaming because of the pandemic. We're pushing it back. We're going to do streaming. And she went, nope, this is what the contract says. And you guys want to renegotiate things? Let's talk. I guess this all went back and forth for, like, basically since 2019. And it's been a situation. But, of course, as we all know, Disney released it in theaters as well as online on Disney Plus. And... you know, again, I still don't understand how the metrics of measurement are made as far as how Disney Plus quantifies the money that gets made exactly. And I don't know all that jazz, but basically it made a decent amount of money online. And Black Widow did pretty okay for the first 72 hours, and then it just died off. As soon as that opening weekend was done, theater sales just plummeted. And she equates that to the fact that it was on the streaming platform, and once enough people saw it in the movie theater and gave their 2 cents, then everybody else just watched it at home. But the other kicker is that basically by it not doing financially what it was supposed to do, she loses, I think, 15 million, what was it? There's a good chunk of money that she's going to lose out on because it didn't do what it was supposed to do in the theaters. Because it took such a nosedive because of the online platform. So she is now suing Disney for their breach of contract with her. And I have to say,
if you don't mind me to add, throw into the fact that all of the execs at Disney stand to receive a giant bonus with the uptick of streaming and sign-ins.
Yeah.
That people, you know, the more people sign in, the bigger their bonus ends up being, and they make essentially more money. So they were, you know, they were by all accounts like, okay, well, let's just go ahead and take full advantage of this and get this, you know, this can be a huge platform to basically have an uptick for the Disney Plus, which is what they need. They want to be ultimately successful.
Right. And now, do I think that ScarJo is hurting for money and she's trying to get as much money as she possibly can? I don't think that's actually the point of it. I mean, yeah, that would piss me off too. I'd be like, whoa, you guys, I was supposed to make this much money and this is not what I'm making. Like, are you kidding me? So it's definitely, obviously that's a big portion of it. But I think for her, it's really just the whole premise of it. Like, they literally went against her contract and screwed her. Like, it is... the most blatant, like, no, we don't really care what legally you already have contracted in the situation. We're just going to do whatever the hell we want to do because we're Disney. F you. And honestly, I'd sue their asses off too. I would be so pissed.
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this too, and I'm with you, Michelle. Like, I'm in her corner when it comes to this because I could kind of see this company, I could kind of see Disney doing that, just being like, you know what, we look at the big picture, which is the big picture for them is make sure they have a strong foundation on our streaming platform. The Marvel and the Disney movies, they're going to be there. They're going to do fine. You know, in the grand scheme of things, what I ultimately expect to hear is that Disney and Scarlett Johansson have reached an undisclosed settlement or whatnot when it comes to them working with her and trying to make things right so that she retracts the lawsuit or whatever the case may be. But it's like the lawsuit is just it's a shame that it had to go that route because it leaves to me kind of like a tainted image of the relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this is a business and, you know, they made the open decision. I mean, I haven't read the contract. I don't know the stipulations wholeheartedly, but if it says clear as day, like she is, and they have stated that it is to be a theatrical release first and foremost and only, then they don't have a leg to stand on. They will reach a settlement and they will basically pay her to stop talking because, you know, going deeper and deeper and deeper, in my opinion, with Disney, it just makes them look bad more and more and more when they are very much a company that thrives on its reputation and image first and foremost.
Yeah. So my point to this whole thing, I didn't mean to go super off track here, but my point is mostly like that leads me to go, do I want to watch Jungle Cruise on the platform or do I want to go to the theaters and support theatrical releases? And it's a hard balance at this moment right now with COVID and the Delta variant, because that's definitely, for me, that's what's playing into not going to the theaters. Even though I wear a mask, I have been vaccinated, and I am comfortable with my life choices in this entire scenario. I'm still leery, and it's hard, but I also don't want to like keep letting Disney win in that direction, I guess. Is that the best way to put it? You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess I know what you mean. You're still giving them money either way.
I am. But I'm also giving money to the theater. I'm also giving money to keep that, you know, anything that might be like in other people's contracts live in theory. Well, my tiny little fraction of pebbly money that goes in, you know, I don't know. It's just the principle of the point. Gosh, dang it. Anyways. Let's talk about more movies. What else did you guys watch?
Well, so that, as we mentioned, was number one in the box office. Down at number three is a movie that's in its second week in release, M. Night Shyamalan's Old.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that movie.
Oh, I watched Old, too. I watched Old. Sorry about that.
All right. So then both Bobby and Yasha, you guys have both seen Old. Like I said, I've been out of touch. I haven't seen anything. This is definitely a movie I'm kind of curious about. I'll say before you guys share your thoughts, like I watched the trailer for this and I mean, I guess what I'm about to say kind of goes for M. Night films in general. I mean, there's M. Night films I love. And then there's one in particular movie I absolutely think is probably the worst movie I've ever seen. Like literally that bad. So when I watched the trailer for Old, I was like, man, this is really could go either way for me. I could see that this would really be a very interesting, good movie, or this could just be absolutely terrible. So now I haven't heard reaction to this actually at all. I don't know what reviews are. I don't know what people have been saying. So you guys are going to tell me first, how was Old? Yasha, you went first with Jungle Cruise. So Bobby, how was Old?
So I saw it when it came out the opening week, last week, I guess it is at this point. And I'm still trying to make up my mind how I think about it. I lean more towards liking it. But it's not for the reasons why I think I should like it. It's more out of that I respected the way it looks from a visual standpoint. I like that M. Night continues to take swings at stuff that not everyone else is doing out there. You know, he's not playing it safe. He takes chances. And so I appreciate the fact that he likes to do things. And granted, this actual story is based off a graphic novel. So he's adapting it to a certain degree, but still I think just the idea of being able to do this as his next project, following up what Mr. Glass and or glass. And so I think I feel like he, a lot of times, even though he has these really good ideas, just doesn't always execute them as well as he used to in the beginning. And I think that's kind of the issue with this movie. There's good stuff going on in the movie. And I think a lot of the performers, the actors in the movie are doing really great work with the material that they have. It's just that I think that the material they have could be stronger, particularly in the dialogue. I think a lot of times it comes off clunky and just not realistic in the way that people would talk. And so it becomes an issue at times when you're just kind of like scratching your head as to why would someone say that, or just the way that it flows, it just doesn't connect all the time. But the story elements are what keep you intrigued and going. And I would be lying if I said I wasn't interested and caught up in it, in the story, and wanting to see what happens. And then you're getting, as you go along, as everything starts to unfold, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm along for the ride. But then it's like certain aspects of that are bumpy, and it kind of jolts you for a minute, and you're like, oh man, you know, we were going good there, and then you just kind of threw me off track a little bit. So can we get back on? And you kind of get back on, but then he kind of throws you a little bit again. So it's sort of a mixed bag. Like I said, ultimately, I still think I did like it, but it could have been so much better. And I think there was a lot left on the floor in terms of what could have made this a better movie and more satisfying movie. And there's elements even within towards the end of the movie that I just feel like the way it plays just felt disjointed and could have been more cohesive. But again, I think that I appreciate the fact that he goes for these things and doesn't always necessarily succeed in the way that I would hope or want. But I will never not go see an M. Night movie just because he's always doing something interesting. And he always has like that either Hitchcock or Twilight Zone type aspects to his movies that I enjoy, generally speaking, other than a couple on his resume that don't really have that. But for me, I think that I just enjoy to see what he's going to come up with next. And even if it doesn't connect in the way that I want it to, I don't want him to stop kind of taking those chances. So it didn't come out the way I hoped, but I still liked it. But it just could have been even on a better level if it had really connected and hit it out of the park.
All right. All right. Yasha?
You know what? I think Bobby hit it. He basically said exactly how I was feeling as well. I didn't hate it, and like him, I think I'll always go and try and check out an M. Night movie because he does try to push the curve a little bit when it comes to traditional filmmaking and be a little different, be a little obscure and abstract when it comes to his films. It was very, very clunky, and it sounded very, very scripted when the movie first started. As we moved forward, I tended to appreciate it a little bit more. And like you, Bobby, I think the best way to describe it is like I was engaged. I wanted to see where this was going, how this was going to end, what this was all about, you know, what made everything possible and what we're doing. And I kind of enjoyed it. Like I really liked how it kind of wrapped up in a nice, neat little package, almost like as a gift for you to leave with some sort of resolution and satisfaction of what was happening in the film and the story. And I don't want to give away what happened, so that's all I'm going to say about it. But I was very satisfied to the ending of the film, and I did. I kind of liked it. So yeah, I'm with Bobby on that one. I mean, he summed it up great. At the beginning, yeah, like I said, very clunky. It almost sounded very, very scripted through the entirety of the film. So it's like, and these are all very seasoned and professional actors, so it was kind of weird to see how that was. But maybe that's kind of what he was going for with this whole hard exterior and then, you know, kind of robotic lifestyle to the point where it was, you know, it got a little bit more fluid and emotional as the story progressed. It all made sense and it was good. I enjoyed it. I could probably watch it again, maybe not in the theater, but I could sit through it again.
Gotcha.
right.
I think I'm the same way. I'm always going to go see an M. Night. I'm always curious to see what he's going to put out there.
Same here. Like, I mean, overall, I really like M. Night, you know. But
yeah.
So, since I've been out of town, I haven't seen this yet, but I do want to see it.
Yeah. No, it seemed like an intriguing film from the trailer. Anyways, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. I forgot it came out this weekend. Man.
Oh, yeah, last weekend.
Well, yeah.
And then, where's that box office at again? Oh, man, I had it in front of me, and there it is. Down There at 11 is a film in its fifth week of release, The Forever Purge, a movie I know, Yasha, you've been dying to see.
I won't go see those movies anymore. Fuck those movies. I have no desire to see them. I've tried enough. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. It just gets stupider and stupider as I watch them, and I refuse to give my money to that bullshit.
well, Bobby, it sounds like you gave some of your money to that.
Bullshit. Finish my sentence. If you're going to quote me, it was that bullshit.
I definitely gave some of my time to it. And I gave some of my A-list to it, I suppose.
Yeah. So in a way, some of your money. Yeah.
So, yeah. Hey, you got three movies a week, and right. I got to use it or lose it. So,
right.
Movies will be seen, and I did see The Forever Purge, and I don't know, I think I come at it from a different place than Yasha with these movies. I like a lot of the social commentary that goes on in the movies, and the other aspects of it, I guess, are just how are they going to kill people off, and that's kind of the bottom baseline of what I go to these movies to see. And this one is no different in that respect, The Forever Purge. It takes place after, if I'm not mistaken, because it's the way the movies have kind of gone in the last few, they kind of bounced around in time a little bit. But this one takes place after the one where they kind of had stop doing the purge, right? And then this one seems to have started it back up again because, you know, people got to be killing. So they just weren't going to not kill people. And so they had to reinstate it or whatever. And so this takes place on a day where the purge happens and then it ends the next day. But then people are starting to continue to kill even after they're not supposed to anymore. And so that's kind of why they call it the Forever Purge. And it's basically following this this couple that is works on a ranch, a Hispanic couple. And so I'm trying to dance around it because I don't want to say too much. There's like a lot of elements of what normally happens in a purge, but this one is mostly based around the idea of racism, borders across Mexico, a lot of those elements in it. Also the idea of the people who are Trump supporters. It's not veiled very thinly. It's pretty much out there in your face and up front. And it's weird because normally there's a level of social commentary in the movies that it's kind of like, okay, it sort of shines a light up to society to a certain degree. And you're kind of like, throughout all the other stuff that's going on, it gives you a little something to chew on and think about. But this one is like, I don't know. I left the theater, and even when I was in the theater, I felt like I needed to take a shower. I felt dirty watching it. I don't know. It's very hard to describe this movie because it felt so like it was real, like this could be happening any day now because of how tense and tight everyone is about everything in the world, that it just I did not make me feel good watching it, because it was just like, ugh, this is the type of movie that I feel like someone would watch and then get ideas, bad ideas. And then it's just like, I didn't want, you know, I didn't like that feeling while I was sitting there watching it. And so it was just, it like, it felt like it hits too close to home in a way. And so it was a very odd experience watching this one, where usually I can sort of suspend disbelief and just get into the movie. This one just felt too like it could happen in a real sort of way. And so it didn't feel like I was watching it's a piece of entertainment at that point. And so it was just kind of odd. And so, it just left me feeling very weird about it. And so this is supposed to be the last one, but who knows, you know, these movies make money. And so you never know if they'll really do it as a last one or do some sort of spinoff or something. But I don't know. It's very odd experience. I don't think I've ever experienced a movie in that way before, where it left me feeling that way. So obviously a lot of people saw it because it did pretty well in the weekend. I don't know if you see it there, David, but I can't remember how much it cost to make, but it's
got a total domestically of 42.7.
And typically the movies don't cost that much to make, you know, maybe 10 million, 15
million. Oh yeah. Cost to make. So. Yeah. Let's see. I don't have that right in front of me right now. Maybe. Yeah. Nah, I don't know.
Yeah. But I could easily see them saying, well, we were going to make this the last one, but you know, we could still do more. And I could see at a certain point in the movie where they would go with another one if they were going to, but I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm good on these now. I think I don't need any more. And so hopefully this will be the last one and we can do something else. Because, yeah, this one was just freaky to me.
So basically, I definitely should not see this movie. Absolutely not.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Like, I mean,
have a hard time recommending this.
Not one. To go down a rabbit hole, but like, even since I've been back from my camping trip, I think mentally I haven't been in a great place, like catching up on news. Like, yeah. To the point that I'm like, I probably should stay off my phone. Like, I'm borderline depressed now. If I see this movie, I don't need to see this.
Yeah. Agreed.
And yeah, watching the trailer for it, I remember getting that, like, even from the trailer, I was like, well, I see what social commentary they're doing with this film. It was super obvious. And it sounds like as you watch the movie, it was as obvious as it looked.
So, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Forever Purge. Yeah, I haven't seen any of those since I saw the second one. I don't even think I saw I see the third one? I don't even know. How many have there been?
Man, I think there's been at least five or six.
Yeah, I think there have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So that's the Forever Purge. So Michelle, you haven't been on in a little bit. You've watched some stuff.
I have, yeah.
I mean, to start off with films, I'm curious. You watched one film pretty recently. What?
Space Jam or Roadrunner?
Roadrunner, not Space Jam.
I mean, I'll tell you my Space Jam. I was kind of like, yeah. I mean, I get it. It's updated and it's for today's times, but it was not good. Just leave it at that.
Man, that by the way, that pitch meeting for Space Jam was so perfect.
Oh my god!
So, oh my god!
So dude, so I love amazing. Watching that guy on YouTube. It just never gets old.
It's hilarious.
Pitch meeting is by far gone well past Honest Trailers for me. Like Honest Trailers, occasionally they're okay, but lately they haven't been so great.
But pitch meeting,
yeah.
God bless that YouTube guy.
That guy crushes it.
That guy kills it. He really points out the things that you go, huh? That is. Huh? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
He's like, but why? Because, okay.
Okay, so fine with me. Okay.
Because money. Oh, yeah, all right. I like That's money. Right. Yeah, we of like course. Money. He does such a good job. Like, yeah, you're right, Dave. Like, I'm with you. It is just destroyed Honest Trailers, in my opinion. Like, he just crushes it every single week. I can fall down a black hole of watching that guy's videos for like 30 minutes at a time. Yeah. Sometimes just watching the same ones over and over again. He's so funny.
Yeah,
it's dangerous. So yeah, Space Jam, whatever. So I watched Roadrunner. Roadrunner is a documentary about.
Wasn't he in Space Jam too?
Bazinga.
Bobby, you're better than that.
I think I'm right at the level of dad jokes that I need to be at.
Running low lately. No, so Roadrunner is a documentary about basically the life of Anthony Bourdain. I mean, I wouldn't say like it doesn't talk really about his childhood or anything like that. It's not honestly. Like a full
biopic kind of
thing. It's not a full biopic. It's basically the, so you're a chef. And you wrote a book, and the book did really freaking well. And they said, you need to write another book. And he goes, I don't think I can write another book. And they said, well, let's try this. And then that shot him into TV stardom, basically. And so it basically picks up from that point on. So it's like early mid-90s. He's got the book out that he writes, No Reservations. And it's all about basically what life is like. Working as a cook in a restaurant, like just all the behind the scenes crap that goes down and what it's actually like. And you get a really good glimpse of his mental faculties, we'll put it, throughout his career. You know, it sounds like he really likes structure, and I guess he found structure in working in a restaurant. And he wrote this really great book because it was written just in his own voice, and it was just the way he talks, and he's actually a really spectacular writer. Well, so the movie goes on, obviously, to start off with how he got into even doing a TV show, and it just goes through that whole timeline. And this whole documentary is interviews with cast and, well, mostly crew, friends, producers, and such like that, ex-wives, and a little bit of his friends. You know, one of his best friends is Chef Eric. Oh, what's Eric's last name? I forget. The French chef. Chef Eric. Anyways, it's one of those, like, you see him, you'd be like, oh, okay, that chef. Anyways, so it's like you get to talk to a lot of people. And the thing with Chef Eric is, like, that was the last person who basically saw him. So it was kind of like it was a big thing.
Oh, okay.
One of the last people. Like, anyways, so
is that Eric Ripper?
Yes, thank you.
Did I use his last name?
I think it's Ripper.
Okay,
it's French. But anyways, so it just goes through the, you know, everything, and then it is one of those movies that if you are triggered by mental health situations or suicide, be prepared. This one is emotional. Like, I really enjoyed the documentary. I will say it's not the best documentary I've ever seen. It definitely doesn't in that category. But it's not a bad documentary. But man, the theater, people were emotional. They were crying.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It gets very, and I could see if you have suicide in your life somewhere, that it could be triggering. So, I mean, like, give you full warning on that. Obviously we all know what happens to Anthony, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if everybody has like the details on that, but they do talk a little bit about the details of his death. And so, yeah, it's one of those films, like, if you are triggered by mental illness and depression and suicide, it's definitely a triggering film for sure.
It might not be for you.
It might be a bit much to take, but it was done really well. I mean, I was even tearing up. I mean, I say that, I cried everything, but I mean, not Space Jam.
What? No.
Man. But no, I cry at good things, but, you know, I will say, like, even I got pretty teary-eyed because it's, you know, he left behind a really spectacular daughter and other family and friends that loved him. But it was interesting picture into his mind and his mind's workings, basically, in his career. But I have to say, yeah, I think we lost somebody pretty special. When you watch this movie, you realize, yeah, he was actually kind of an interesting guy. I mean, for, like, most chefs, big ego, attitude-y, some would say kind of an a-hole, but that's not that shocking, I think, for chefs. I mean, really. But it sounds like he really kind of got out of that kind of personality towards the end, or not towards the end, somewhere in the middle, I guess. I think his daughter actually helped a lot. I think her just being in existence helped him. I don't know. It was, if you have any interest in Anthony Bourdain at any point in time in your life, or you ever watch any of his shows, or you have any kind of inclination, I would say watch it. It was an intriguing look into the mind's eye for him, at least, I would say. So yeah, good documentary. Not the best documentary by any stretch of the imagination. Definitely not like, oh, there should be awards for this. This was made really well, and it's fine.
Right.
So put that one. I'll put that out there.
There's a little bit of controversy surrounding this documentary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess it sounds like you weren't too aware of it, but apparently, and I won't speak in too much terms of it because I don't know full details and I don't want to get too much of it wrong. So people, if you are interested, can look it up. But from my understanding of the way the movie is made, the director took a little bit of leeway with some of what Anthony Bourdain was saying in the movie in terms of, I guess there's times when he's doing voiceover and he's reading a letter or something.
Yeah.
Apparently, he used some sort of level of digital AI to take words that Anthony has said in the past and piece it together to read this thing.
Ooh.
And so it wasn't actually Anthony Bourdain saying that in his own words. It was like something that was put together. And so that's causing a little bit of a stir because, you know, it's like not representing him saying some things he actually said.
I could actually almost take a swing at what I think it probably is, truth be told. It's pretty early on in the film, too. And the thing is if it's what I think it is, it's done pretty well. And it sounds...
Yeah, that's the problem, I think.
Well, yeah, because it's words that he said at some point. I mean, God, they have hours, absolute just thousands of hours of Anthony on video and audio. My God.
So it's almost like deep faking.
It's like a deep fake. Yes,
but audio.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, if you've ever watched any of his shows ever, you know, he comes on, he monologues, right?
Yeah.
And that was something that they developed with him quickly in the very first show they started with him. They realized Anthony is a quiet guy and he's really freaking boring. He doesn't talk to people. Like, it took a lot. Years later, he started really talking to people and having conversations, but it took him a lot. So at first it was, crap, we have a lot of footage of him just standing there and looking at people. Eating food.
Right.
So they're like, Anthony, you just need to write stuff. What is happening in your head? And then they started him doing the model. They're like, okay, this is how we'll work this. Like, this is our workaround. And it's intriguing because he actually is saying the things he was thinking. Like, he's really talking like himself and what's going through his head. But he's just not that way on film. Like, he's just boring. And that's what they're like, it took years to get him to converse with complete strangers.
Right.
They're like, and once he started getting that way, it was great. But man, the first few years, they're like, thank God the man can write, because then he could write a monologue and write things and write about the episode and then monologue it over. It's great. Anyways, no, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what they're talking about. And all I could say is, no, it's not the most cheerful line, and it's not something that I think most people would say. But I will be honest, like, is it something that Anthony probably could have said at some point in his life to the people closest to him? Yeah. I could see it. It fits in well with him and his personality and his mindset most of his life. And so that's not that shocking. I think they actually say it in the trailer for the... I bet you that's what it is. I'll have to look into it later on, but yeah. So yeah, even with that controversial bit, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, if you have any interest in Anthony Bourdain, I would say check it out.
So that's Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain is its full title. It's in a limited run right now in theaters. Apparently, it's also available on Spectrum On Demand as like a $20 rental.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I don't think it's available anywhere else to rent online.
Right, and I think that's something to do with CNN, the company that owns a lot of things. They're the ones that produced it, and they owned his show for the last few years and everything.
Right.
So that's really all the movies I've seen, though.
Right. What else?
I had a comfort movie a few nights ago, but otherwise not really.
Catch us up on what you've been watching. It's been a
while. What's going on? I don't know.
Come on, you can do this.
oh, gosh. Okay.
I'm curious. You watched The White Lotus. I talked about it with Bobby.
I did watch The White Lotus.
Last episode.
I've only watched the first two episodes. There's three episodes.
Well, as of right now, there's probably four episodes. But, a couple hours ago or an hour ago, there was only three, and you've seen two of them.
I've seen two of them. I was going to watch a third one with somebody else, but, you know.
I didn't know certain somebody was watching them. So.
No, I started watching The White Lotus, and yeah, I was like, it's kind of like, so far in two episodes, I'll go with the word slow burn, but I'm intrigued. Like, I can't not stop watching this. Like, I'm like, I was looking forward to watching this third episode. It's interesting.
So The White Lotus is, for those who don't know, it's on HBO. It appears to be, from my understanding, just a miniseries. I don't think it's going to be like a multi-season show.
I think it's based on a book.
It's no, I don't think so. I think
the writer, director, producer guy. I think he wrote the.
I don't think he based it on anything.
I thought he wrote a book. Then he decided it is. I don't know. I'd be wrong.
I've now seen the first three episodes. As I talked about it on our last podcast with you, Bobby, I was a little unsure about that first one, but I was enough intrigued. Like, I'll give this a chance. I will say, after the third episode in particular, I'm like, okay, I'll definitely watch the rest of this now. Yeah.
I think what's interesting is, I'm trying to say this as nicely as I can, as a person who not only worked in the hospitality industry, but worked specifically in a very high-end hotel, maybe not boutique hotel, I worked in a very high-end hotel with very high-end clientele, people that have like real money, and getting to understand sometimes their way of thinking and their personalities, like when they would stay for extended visits or they'd be repeat people that come back around the same time of year every year for vacations. This is pretty interesting from that aspect, because I'm like, yeah, there's that. I've had that personality type. Yep. I've had that personality type. Yep. I've had that. Like, I see them all and I go, he's not just throwing rocks and hoping he hits something. He's hitting stuff. Like, there's some defined character definitions happening for sure. And so, yeah, it hits a little home for me, and it's intriguing, and I'm curious to see exactly just how it's going to roll out.
Yeah, especially with the third episode, the ball is really, I think, kind of rolling toward what's kind of hinted at in the first episode. I don't know. I like the execution as it's moving along very well. And by the way, and then the side note, the more and more I've been watching it, maybe it helps too. Like, I've watched a couple episodes with headphones on as to not disturb like the kids when they're sleeping or whatever. The music, I really enjoy the music.
It's really good.
And maybe it's something that stands out even more because I'm watching it with headphones on instead of just with speakers. I don't know. It shouldn't matter, but one of those things. I'm liking the show more and more.
That's good to hear. Does Bobby,
Bobby hasn't seen it, I don't think.
Oh,
unless
no?
You started watching it.
I have not, no.
Okay. I'd recommend it. It's interesting. It's a, it's a mystery. I like it.
Yeah.
A little slower burn, but it's good. Anyways. So yeah, White Lotus. I've watched all of season one of Hacks on
HBO Max,
and it's really good. it's really good. I know why it's got all these nominations for Golden Globes, and I actually started it before the Golden Globe nominations came out. It was about halfway through when those came out, and I was like, yeah, I am not shocked by this at all. The writing is really good, and on one side of things, the last episode, it was definitely not like you didn't see how that end was coming. But when it does, you're like, oh, God, how is this woman going to come back from this? Like, oh, Jesus. I'm very excited for season two. It's just I can't really praise it enough. The writing is spectacular. The acting is spectacular. The two main female leads, it's really good. Highly recommend. I think if you were ever involved in anything in Hollywood, like writer-ish or like sitcoms or comedy in any kind of way, if you had any kind of input into that world, I think you'd watch this and be like, yes, dear sweet God, yes, Hollywood writers, I hate everybody. Like, you'd totally connect. You'd be like, that is... yeah, that's how the world goes there. That's exactly it. I think you would really connect with it. And so, but even if you have no knowledge of it, it's still really well done. Even if you don't quite understand, because they do talk a lot about like generational stuff, Even if you don't quite connect exactly with like one or the other of the two main characters, they do it so well, and you understand everybody's motivations in such a spectacular way that you go, I don't connect with it, but I understand it. If that makes any sense.
So, Michelle, you said something that I think maybe needs a little explanation, is that for someone that doesn't know, what is the show and who's in it?
Oh, yeah, I guess I probably should have said that. Who's in it? God, I don't. I'm sorry, I didn't pull that up. But so what the show is about is
Jean Smart.
I know she's the lead in it.
Jean Smart's the lead in it, but the other actress, and I honestly couldn't tell you what her name is right now. So Jean Smart plays a woman who has been a comedian since the late '60s, a very popular comedian, and somewhere around the year 2000-ish, I'm going to throw out a number and estimate, she's been on the Las Vegas Strip. Running her own show. Or I guess it would have been late in the mid-90s based on the anniversary episode. Anyways, she's been headlining her own show on the Vegas Strip. And, of course, Vegas being Vegas, the people that own and run the hotel want her to move along. She's done her time. It's time to go.
Right.
So, you know, everybody's saying that her jokes, her material is old and dated. So there's this girl, the other actress, who is...
Is it, I'm assuming, Hannah Einbinder?
Yes. Einbinder? Fresh, young, millennial, almost Gen Xer.
Outcast 25-year-old, apparently.
So basically, millennial Gen Xer. She, I guess, is a comedic writer, but she's very much in her own generation and in her own voice and head all of the time. And it got her in some trouble on a sitcom. With some stuff that she tweeted out. So in order to basically just have income to give her money to pay her mortgage, she does what her, agent tells her to do, which is to go work for the comedian woman played by Jean Smart. So she goes there, and because the two of them are just completely different planets, it's just the two of them colliding a lot. But as the time goes on, their relationship builds and forms into something really interesting. And that's really what the show's all about. It's just the two of them just taking polar ends of where they are in life, in story, in comedy styling even, and finding a median to work at to help, I think, both of them really at the end. It's good. It's really good.
Nice. That's on HBO Max.
I've seen the first episode. Don't have enough information to form a solid opinion after it, other than it's interesting. I would continue watching it as I get the opportunity to, mostly on the strength of Jean Smart. I mean, she's rock solid. She's always been good. I think I remember the first thing I think I ever seen her in was Designing Women. And then, you know, obviously she's gone out from there and done a ton of other things. And Mayor of Easttown, I think, it's been a good year for her, but she's always been such a great actor, and that I'd watched just the first episode just because of her, and that I'd been hearing some good things about it. But I definitely want to keep up with this, or at least I'll hopefully try and get caught up with it before season two comes. That I know that they did announce, I believe, mm-hmm. that there's a season two coming. So yeah, I definitely want to continue on with it.
I'd recommend it because, yeah, that first episode kind of leaves you going, I don't like either of these two people as people. They're both not great. Right. You know, it leaves you kind of going, yeah. I don't like either of them. And then by the end, you're just like, yeah. Okay, like you understand what motivates both of them. And it's just really different. It's just wicked, wicked good writing. Like, I cannot even stress. It's really good.
And then other than that, Ted Lasso.
Speaking of
the first
two
episodes, you've seen Michelle?
No, I thought Bobby was saying something. Sorry.
I was jumping in before David could and just saying, speaking of good writing, and then he went into Ted Lasso. That's all. That's what I was setting up, I guess.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, Ted Lasso.
I've only ever heard great things about it. I've never seen it, but
I can't believe you've not watched it.
I've never seen a show in my life. I've never seen a show in my life that seems to be 100% like everyone that's seen it loves it. Yeah. And not just likes it, they love it.
It's awesome.
Honestly, it's because I watch so much stuff. I want to sit down and just like sit there and watch it all in one sitting as much as possible, because who knows when the next time, if I start it, like that I'll get back around to seeing the second episode and so on and so forth. So I want to sit there and watch it all. But I got to say, and something I'll probably touch on a little bit here, and David has been a recipient and burned by it many times on this show, of the idea of something that becomes so hyped that when you see it, it doesn't quite live up to those expectations.
I was just going to bring that up with you on this one.
I'm a little bit afraid of that.
Yeah, like something that's so hyped up. I think for me, I mean, I didn't watch the first season until it was airing recently,
last like two episodes when you and I first started it.
Yeah, like, or I thought it was even done, or I don't remember, but
it was close to being done.
It was definitely, the hype had been running around for a while, but I think in my benefit, I feel like this was a benefit that I hadn't even seen a trailer for it. Like, I just watched it.
Yeah, I did too, yeah.
I really, other than like, because I use Apple TV as my main like streaming device, and other than seeing like the kind of images as ads kind of in the, you know, in the app, I guess, other than that, I really almost didn't even know what I was getting into.
I just knew it was Jason Sudeikis and it was around soccer. That's literally all I knew.
Yeah. So I feel like maybe that helped. I feel like if I had a ton of hype and I had a better grasp of what the show was about and had seen like a bunch of clips, then maybe I would have started to form like an idea in my head of what I was getting into. And then if I'd seen it, if it didn't meet those expectations, I might have been disappointed. I don't know. That's kind of what I'm getting at. But the first two episodes are out now.
Season two.
I'll say really quick. I'll start since I've actually have seen those. Hey, I love the show. The first two episodes, it feels like it's missing a bit of the charm of the first season so far, but I'm also like, I'm going to keep watching, and I feel like it's going somewhere with this. Like it's a little on purpose almost.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah. That first season was, I mean, knocked out of the ballpark. It was just such a great feel-good show. And so I was like, I cannot wait for season two. Like, bring it on. Yeah, these first two episodes are a little, feels like it's missing the mark a little bit. Like, it's trying to find its footing, which isn't the worst thing when you're talking about TV shows, but it's a bad thing when we're talking about this TV show because there's only so many episodes. I'm kind of like, okay, guys, you need to kind of get there a little faster, I think. But it is missing a little bit of its charm, I agree. I feel like some of the jokes are not hitting as well as they did in the first season thus far. But that's not to say they won't get better.
Right.
We just got to keep watching.
Yeah. But that's just...
But it's not bad.
Not much to talk about. Just two episodes. That's where I am so far.
Yeah. It's not like it's bad.
No. Still can't recommend this first season enough.
Oh my God. The first season is so good. The way that second episode started, that was rough, man.
Oh. Okay, anyway. and then, I mean...
I guess the first episode, actually. I'm sorry, I'm bad. Yeah, the first episode. I'm wrong. The first episode, it started out rough.
And then other than that, you've been in, like, Olympics land for...
I have been... whenever I've been home in the last week, I've watched Olympics for the most part.
Right.
For the most part.
We've talked about the Olympics on here in the past. You're very big into.
Big on the Olympics. I love me some Olympics. Here's all I'll say about the 2020, i.e. 2021 Summer Olympics in Tokyo. Opening ceremonies were blah to me. They were pretty lackluster. There's probably two or three okay, this is a good moment. This is good. But overall, it was really, really, really boring. And some of the stuff to watch, some of the events are also a little bit boring. And the only thing I can literally attest any of it to is because there's nobody in the stadiums. There's nobody there.
No crowds.
There's no crowds. There's no, like.
Sucks.
It totally sucks. Like, I will say, like, they finally did dub in some stadium noise for the women's final in rugby. And it helps. It super helps make you feel more involved in the game and what you're watching. But then it's like you watch other stuff like tennis, and hear me out on this. I know at tennis, it's mostly a quiet game. But in between certain things, there's definitely clapping and cheering, like when really good points get scored. So it makes you like excited even more, like, oh yeah, that was, whew, got close. Same with like volleyball and stuff. When there isn't that assistance in verification that you enjoy, like, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't, it doesn't resonate the right way. So it's been kind of hard to really get into the things, and like, I don't know. It's just a not surprising because like everything that has happened since COVID, it's just a different Olympics. It just is. And I'm not saying it's a bad Olympics, but it's a little lacklustery in certain ways. But then there's been some really great performances and things that have occurred, you know, like, I won't get into it all, but, you know, Simone Biles basically putting her mental health ahead of her physical health and ahead of other things, I think is something that should be really looked at and commended. And I think it should be something that should be discussed more about, you know, within the just athletic world as a whole. And then even today, like, there was two men that are high jumpers, and their scores today landed them in a tie for gold, and they opted, instead of having a jump off to figure out who would be gold and who would be silver, that they would just share the gold medal. They decided they both gave absolutely all of their all. They had some of their best jumps in their own history of jumps ever, and they both were just like, no, you know what, we're just gonna share it. Like, we don't need to say which one of us is 100% the better jumper. We both gave our all out there, and we're just gonna share it. And that's
pretty cool.
That's what the Olympics are about, man. You know, like, that's what I like to see. Like, women's indoor volleyball, you know, one of the key players came down super hard on her ankle at the beginning of the second set. Just super bad. Not great. You know, didn't break it, but it's not good. Not good at all. And, you know, the coach of the other team, which happened to be the Russian Federation, you know, kind of checked in on her, like, hey, you know, I hope you're okay, I hope things are fine. And that's what the Olympics are about. So there's been moments, but overall, you know, kind of some of the same old same, you know. China dominated women's longboard diving. Men's USA swim team dominated in the 4x4 relay. Not surprising. So, you know, something staying on par as tradition seems to be dictating. But overall, good. Definitely not the best. I'll be honest, I'm really looking forward to Beijing in the winter and Paris for the next summer. I am gosh darn giddy for Paris. I won't lie. I think that's going to be awesome.
And what, you guys are getting it out there in California, right? 4 years after that?
2028, baby. LA.
2028.
What?
2028.
We're going to have to do a road trip.
Man, that's a long road trip from Florida.
Yep, I've done it.
It's going to be awesome.
I've done both directions twice.
It's going to be awesome. We could do do shows. We could, like, it's going to be great. We should go. It's going to be amazing. Yeah. So, I'm super down with it.
Yeah. So that's an I-10 drive, just constant.
It'll be fun. It'll be great. But cool fun fact about the Olympics this year. The medals, the gold, silver, and bronze medals, are made from recycled cell phones and laptops. The medals that are found in those, they use them recycled, and that's how they made the medals this year.
Really?
I think that's fascinating.
There's gold in laptops? And probably, cell phones?
Probably bits of gold, I'm guessing.
And everything, I'm assuming.
I don't know.
I'm not, you know.
Like, hey, talk about stack.
I might need to start collecting some old. Got
a stack of Blackberries and Nokias over here.
And you have to realize, like, this is, you know, this is Japan. So, I mean, like, they've got stuff laying around. I don't know how much. Apparently, a lot. So.
I guess.
They must have a. I don't know all the full details. I'm just saying. Fun fact. Full of fun facts. Oh, and Ecuador won its very first Olympic gold medal today. That was pretty sweet. Go Ecuador. It was a woman, too. She killed it. Weightlifting. That's pretty awesome.
I was about to ask what that was.
I'm just saying, you know, like there are cool things that do still occur in the Olympics, is what I'm saying.
Not to sit on the Olympics forever. I'll say real quick. You're obviously... I definitely love the Olympics. I've always watched the Olympics. You are certainly more into it than me. But I've always enjoyed the Olympics.
I screamed at the television.
Going into Tokyo, I mean, there was a part of me that was a little like, should we even be doing this? Like, you know, but then when you start watching it, I guess I'm coming at it with that negative kind of expectation. And I'm actually been like enjoying it more, even without the fans. I feel like it's still kind of working for me. It's fine. Like, yeah, I think it's better with fans and seats? Absolutely. But it's not as odd, I think, as I kind of thought it was going to be. Maybe I was used to it, too. I watched a ton of sports, you know, this past year without fans in the stands. I think we all have watched sports to a certain extent without fans. So this is kind of an extension of that.
I mean, I think in certain events it doesn't bother me as much. Like track and field and stuff, it doesn't bother me at all because usually track and field, there's not that much noise happening anyway. There's so much else happening when track and field events are going on. There's usually three or four events all happening simultaneously. So it's like they don't really hone in on the noises that are happening because they're like everywhere. Kind of same with gymnastics. It doesn't bother me in gymnastics because gymnastics also, three events are going on simultaneously, you know, in that arena. But like things like the swimming and, I don't know, just there's little things. I think what... I was kind of with you. Like, I have to agree. Like, at first, I was kind of like, why are we doing this? But then it's like you watch these athletes and you realize they have dedicated years of their lives, time, effort, sweat, tears, money, you name it, relationships. They've really put everything they have into this dream of theirs. And I'm glad that we're at least having it, because if we didn't have it at all, these people would just... I mean, if I were an athlete and that's where I was, I'd be freaking crushed. I can't imagine.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, from their viewpoint, thank God it's happening.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You know. So, anyways, that's all I'll say.
Well.
So.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Sorry. Oh. Well, I did have a couple other things I want to talk about briefly. Yeah. But I actually had a question for Yasha, because I know he had mentioned some of the things that he'd watched, and there's one thing on my list that I have not watched yet. I'm planning to watch it. I just have not had a chance. Yasha, have you seen, or did you have a chance to see Snake Eyes?
Oh yeah.
I have not. Not yet.
Okay.
I was kind of interested in true to form with, you know, how things usually are. If you don't see it the first weekend, you start to get swallowed up with other movies that you're going to watch. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't know when I'm going to have time to watch it, since it's now we're past the first weekend. I might have some time tomorrow if I can find something in the middle of the day to go see it. Like, I might do that. So we'll see. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Have you watched
it? Yeah, I just thought I'd throw it out there. No, I didn't have a chance to yet, but I'm going to try and still watch it this week, even though it seems like it kind of came and went, really. You don't even hear anybody talking about it. I don't even know where it was in the top 10, because David went to 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah,
and
then jumped around all over down the place. To 11
So I don't know where it landed. But
Snake Eyes is at 7 right now, and it's second week.
Ooh, wow.
It's made a big drop. It's made a total of $22.2 million.
So,
here's
the one movie that I'm curious. I really wanted to see it this weekend, and it just didn't really happen.
Wait, I'll tell you. I'll review it for you because I already know. Well, no, I don't. Go ahead, say it, and then
it's sure
the movie
I
think it is, I'll talk about it.
And I'll be honest. Ahead. I really wanted to see this movie because it looks it looks pretty incredible.
Boss Baby family business.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Boss Baby.
That Alec Baldwin. That bastard knows me so good.
Gotta love
Don't tell my kids that they can watch it on Paramount Plus.
I'm not saying, you have no idea. Every time I see a commercial, I'll be like, hey guys, look out the window. Click. Hey, what's our dog doing? Click. God, no, please. I'm going to have to figure out, I need to make time for this week, but I really want to see The Green Knight.
Agreed. Bobby.
So, the next movie I'd like to talk about is The Green Knight. So, you remember how I was saying about the idea of hype?
Oh. So,
it's an interesting thing, this movie. I remember seeing one, maybe it was a teaser for it when it was initially supposed to come out. And then obviously COVID happened and everything got pushed. And I never saw anything more after that. But it looked interesting from just the trailer that I initially saw about it. And I didn't know much about the story. This is not a story I don't think is told very often. And it's I guess it's a poem based off a poem or something. And it's the nephew of King Arthur going on this quest that happens when they come across this green knight, essentially, that's challenges him to this fight. And what happens in there, even if I don't want to say too much if you haven't seen the trailer, but it centers around Dev Patel's character of Gawain and this quest he has to go on, and he comes across different things on his quest. This movie is absolutely stunning to look at. It's so well shot. The vistas and the view of everything, the sound design is really great. The score is good. Like, everything about it is really top notch. The acting, I was into the story element of it to see how things are going to happen. The only thing that I really have to say against it is I really wish it was a little bit shorter, because the pacing for me felt a little slow, and it's deliberately so, but it just affected me in just that way, to where a lot of the critics that are reviewing it are absolutely over the moon about it and raving about it, whereas I really enjoyed it a lot, and I'm not quite on their level with it. So I don't have really anything bad to say about it other than the pacing. It's a 2 hours and 10 minutes for the movie. And I felt like it would have been really, like, I would have probably been over the moon about it if it was about an hour and 40, 45 minutes maybe. And so it just was in that way that it just kind of felt like it's runtime. And I just was thinking, like, man, it's so nice to look at. And just, like I said, the sound design, just even hearing everything has a weight to it. And it's just so well done and well put together that I can't not recommend it. I think it's a good movie to go see. And I think you should see it in a theater. It just looks, from a visual standpoint, like a movie that you would want to see in a theater because of the way it's done. And I don't have anything bad to say about it, other than just, I think that it's being lauded as really, you know, maybe a good contender for best picture kind of thing from some of the reviews that I've seen. And I wouldn't quite put it there. Not for that case, but if it was in the category for cinematography and sound and stuff like that, I would absolutely, you know, think that it deserves those areas to be in the category for. But ultimately, I think it was like, I mean, if everyone seems to be giving it like a 9 or a 9.5, I'm saying like it's like, you know, an 8.5 kind of thing. So it's really good. It's just, I think that for me, it was it was more of an issue of pacing and time than anything else.
Yeah, the way you started that off, I thought you were going to like rip into it, man. 8.5. That's pretty good.
No. I'm just saying it's one of those things, like it's a Ted Lasso thing, I think, for some people where, you know, they might enjoy it and think it's really good, but they're not like swooning over it in the way that a lot of the critics have been. And so I think that's kind of where my take is with The Green Knight. I'm not swooning over it, but I do think it's really good and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Well, your reaction is the first reaction I've heard. This is another movie I really wanted to see, but I haven't seen any reviews about it at all. As you've been talking, I looked up Rotten Tomatoes and it's 89%, which is pretty solid. I mean, it's not 100% obviously, but that's 89 is a pretty good score. I mean, this is one of those movies that, like, the first time I saw the trailer, I was like, oh my God, this is so up my alley. I can't wait to see this. And then as it's gotten closer, there's been I've had that feeling of like, I have a feeling this is one of those movies that looks way better than it really is. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised and happy to see that it actually is 89. It's not terrible. Like, that's good.
Cool. So did you watch Escape Room?
I have not yet. I still is on my list of movies to see. There's like maybe a good 3 or 4 movies that I haven't seen that I want to still see before they get out of the theater. And that is one of them. That and Snake Eyes, really. And Stillwater. I want to watch that too. I haven't seen it. Although I am feeling a little, I don't know about it now after Amanda Knox had her story kind of come out about it. So I don't know. We'll see if I end up watching Stillwater. But there is one other movie I did see. And this is a case of where something actually lived up to the hype. And I had not seen a trailer for it. I only knew who was in it. And I didn't even really know what it's about. But you guys there?
Yeah. Yeah. We're waiting.
Can you hear me? Okay. Sound cut out on my end for a second. So I was like, whoa, did everybody just go away or did I just go away?
We're on pins and needles.
So, okay. So, have you guys heard of this movie called Pig?
Michelle, you're nodding your head for those who can't see you. And I have not heard of this.
The Nicolas Cage one that just came out.
It is a Nicolas Cage movie.
The Truffle Hunter.
Yes. This movie was quite amazing. I did not know what I was going into see, really, other than I knew just the briefest of things in terms of this was he had this relationship with a pig that he uses to look for truffles in the woods in the forest, and that was about it. And I watched this movie, and as it unfolds, it's just so it goes in so many different places. I had no expectation of it going, and I just thought it was so good. Honestly, Nicolas Cage is in this movie doing great acting, but without being heavy in the dialogue. Like he does more with just his presence than any words, but then when he does talk, it's like it's one of those things where you have to hear and listen to what he's saying, and it carries weight. And he just does an excellent job in this movie. And just the story itself, it's like, man, I sit there and think about it and look at it, and I'm like, this is one of those things when people say there's no original movies, this is like, hey, this is completely original. I don't even know how this story came about. I mean, it's interesting because it's just like a subject and a topic that I would have never thought of on my own. But seeing it as it unfolds and as it plays out, you're like, man, that's such an interesting take that I never would have thought of. And it makes you start to think about everything that goes into it. And so, I can't recommend this highly enough. I don't know what it has on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if you had that.
It's 90.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's way up there, 97%.
Wow.
Is that critics or audience?
That's critics. Audience is 82%.
Yeah.
Which is also quite high. I'll read the critics' consensus real quick if you guys are interested. Like the animal itself, Pig defies the hogwash of expectations with a beautiful odyssey of loss and love anchored by Nicolas Cage's affectionately raw performance.
Yeah. I would say that that's a good consensus. It's just not going into it knowing anything and other than hearing good buzz about it, it lived up to all those expectations.
I assume you saw this in a theater, right?
I did, yeah. I don't know if there's any other way to see it.
For those who are interested, at least looking at, the Apple TV app, I can see that it will be available in 2 days for, I guess, to purchase.
Nice.
I don't know about rental yet. Though I also see same thing with before Spectrum, you can rent it on demand. So I don't know if there's other services that have rental options, but I am interested. Nice. I will watch this.
Yeah. I would love if you guys get a chance to watch it to hear what your thoughts are as well. Because it just caught me off guard, really.
Yeah. So that is Pig.
Yeah, and especially Nicolas Cage. Sorry, I was just going to say, especially David, because of how much one of his movies recently in recent times you loved, and to see how it's not the same in any regard. I mean,
this is not Mandy. In terms of just
it definitely isn't. But yeah,
he's had an interesting career. Michelle and I were just talking about it yesterday. I think he seems like the kind of actor that is just does everything. It's almost like any movie he's pitched, he's like, all right, sign me up. And then, not to digress.
It's about a pig,
But not to digress, the reason it came up, I was scrolling through the movies section on Apple TV, and I've been seeing more and more movies that Bruce Willis is doing that I'm like, does Bruce Willis need the money? Yeah. I feel like Bruce Willis has had a pretty good career where he could probably just sit back and, take a load off, and he's good.
Yeah, because it's very clear that he doesn't want to be there anymore, right? It's almost very clear that he's not interested in really performing. So he might as well, in my opinion, is dude, just stop.
Just stop. Because
nobody would be mad if you just went away.
He's doing these projects that I'm like, did you really want to, did they pay you a lot to do this? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
That's really weird. Anyway.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, unless anybody has any last minute things they really want to throw in before we go.
Yes. One quick last minute thing that I really want to suggest to people. It very, very fast. If you're in the mood to laugh and like a good comedy, and you haven't watched, if you're already watching Ted Lasso and all that good stuff, there's a show that I watched that is a spinoff of a different show. And it's called Wellington Paranormal. And it's a spinoff of What We Do in the Shadows. And it's about these cops who investigate weird stuff. Hmm. And it's super funny. You can find it on the CW app, or if you have HBO Max, the first season is there. And I think it's only 4 or 5 episodes. So it's an easy, quick watch, but very funny. If you like that kind of humor of Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement, then I think you will enjoy it.
Nice. I haven't heard that. That's cool. All right. Well, with that, we are going to wrap things up and get out of here. As always, we would love to hear back from everyone listening. You can email us at feedback@flickereffect.com. You can reach out to us on Instagram and Twitter at @flicker_effect. We are on YouTube at youtube.com/flickereffect. You can comment, like us, subscribe, all that good stuff over there. With that, I'm David Lott.
I'm Bobby Jackson.
I'm Yasha Wilson.
And I'm Michelle Hillard.
Thanks for listening.